On today's episode of the show, we are having a celebration. Get your popcorn, get your peanuts, get your licorice, balloons, kazoos, party hats, everything you need to throw a party, because today is the first episode in Oregon State sports show history where we are celebrating a win. Welcome to episode 4. I am your co-host. I am Brady Akins. I am the sports editor and podcast extraordinaire of the Oregon State Sports Show. And I am joined, as always, by my friend, the legend himself, who needs no introduction, but he should probably give one anyway.
Yeah, I'll still introduce myself. my name is Andres de los Santos. I am a sports contributor, sports commentator, aka the Swiss Army Knife. That's my nickname. But yeah, we are celebrating a win, and let's just say we need this win. I remember last episode we talked about how this is a must win for Oregon State, and to finally get over that hump and say that we have a win in our record, we're not going 0-3, we don't suck. It's just, I'm very happy about it.
A weight's been lifted, honestly, like on us as fans, and I imagine for the people on the team. It's sometimes you just need one win to get right. Yep. You know, if you get stuck in that hole of, like you mentioned, this is the first win of the season. Oregon State went 0-2 to start. If you get stuck in that hole, it can be really hard to come out of. If you're sitting here at 0-3 really in such a short season, you know, that's going to take so much wind out of the sails. It's hard to sit there and think, like, how do we come back from this? How do we make this okay again? Because you're stuck. You're stuck in a 3-game hole with only 4 more games left to go. But now you don't have to worry about it as much. Now you're sitting here, you have a win. You know what it's like to win. You have a reasonable path to a solid regular season. And I think you mentioned it, but it's something that we really, really hammered coming into this game, like last week's podcast, is this is a must-win game for Oregon State. You have to win this game, and they end up doing it.
It's a must-win. I know. Can we talk about the game itself? Oh, my goodness. That game, my heart was literally coming on my chest. It was, my anxiety was going through the roof. My heart was banging off my chest. The sweat was dripping down my forehead. I was pretty much going insane. I was, man.
We're going to talk about the game itself because there's a lot to talk about with this game.
There is a lot to talk about.
It was, you know, typically with a game, you know, a few big plays decide it, obviously. But this game was a little bit different in that it was a few big plays from each three phases of the game. It was a few big plays, yes, a lot of big plays in the offense, a few big plays in the defense, and then special teams.
Stepped up too. I agree.
I should issue some kind of apology. Last week, we talked about the Washington game. We talked about the blocked punt, and I came on this very show, and I said, you can't really bank on big special teams plays on punt coverage to win you
game. I remember that.
Maybe you can. Maybe you can if you're Oregon State, because this is the second week in a row where Oregon State blocked a punt, and they didn't return this one for a touchdown. What they did do is they got the ball back at, like, the 14-yard line, I think it ended up being, ended up scoring a touchdown that was ultimately decided the game. So maybe you can just bank on big special teams plays if you're Oregon State.
Also, before we start, I also want to apologize for something. I came on this podcast as well and said Cal was going to win the Pac-12 North.
I remember that.
Looking now, I want to apologize to any people I upset, to any Oregon State fan, and to Cal. But yeah, anyone that was hurt,
just
I apologize.
Outlandish claim. We retract it.
I digress.
I think that it's interesting though, because I think that, you know, even if Cal is 0-2 now, they looked a lot better this week than they did.
They did, yes.
It was something that we talked about leading into the game, where I talked a lot about how Cal just looked flat against UCLA. And I'm sure a lot of that was shaking off the rust with it being their first game, but they just didn't.
Granted, they had like 12 games canceled before them, so.
Yeah, they had a lot of
games canceled.
And so I imagine it was hard like jumping into that, but even still, I thought that they would look a lot better, and I wasn't really considering them as much of a threat heading into the Oregon State game. But I think it's important to note that Cal looked good.
They looked amazing.
It's not like Oregon, because for everyone that doesn't know, you should know because it's our first win. It's a big one. But Oregon State ended up winning the game 31-27. It was a really close game. And really, it wasn't really close because Oregon State was playing bad against a bad team. In my mind, it was really close because Oregon State played a really complete game against a team that was playing really well.
Yeah, I agree. All three phases really shined. Literally, the first play of our first drive, Jamar Jefferson, 75 yards for a touchdown. That's insane. That was the biggest moment.
That was really interesting because we talked last week also, at least I think we did. It's been a while ago at this point, but I think we talked about how Cal really struggled last week to stop the run. They allowed like 250, 240, I think, yards on the ground to UCLA. And here we are sitting with Jamar Jefferson, the best running back in the Pac-12. I don't even think it's close.
Yep, no, hands down. I agree.
And in my mind, I'm like, here we go, right? Like, Cal can't stop the run. Oregon State has the best running back in the conference. It's just a mismatch, and it's going to be a huge problem. And that first play hits, and it's just kind of like, yep, I was told y'all. I did expect it to be this dramatic, but, you know, here we are. But I think the interesting thing about Jamar Jefferson's game is that he had that 75-yard touchdown run, which is awesome. He had a 65-yard run in the fourth quarter, which is spectacular. And then
mind you, we were up already. He just decided to run.
that's a legend move, by the way. He didn't score the touchdown. I mean, you know, there's no college fantasy, but if there was, I'm sure people would be losing their minds at the no touchdown thing. Well, but that is a legend move, like turning down the glory of a touchdown on purpose just to ensure that your team gets the win.
Yeah,
kudos. You don't want to repeat of that.
You don't want to repeat of the Atlanta Falcons against the, I think, the Lions. remember that play?
What, trying to not score and falling into the end zone.
I fell in the end zone. Oops. But yeah, I think it was the press conference for Jamar. Someone asked him, was like, were you going to score? And Jamar was like, I was going to. I was 50-50. I was going to, but then I really didn't want anything bad to happen. So that was very smart on Jamar's effort to not score that.
And it's so hard. Like, you know, I'm sure it's easier for him having, you know, scored so many touchdowns in his career. But I know for me, if I was in that situation and I just see but empty field in front of me, I'm taking my points. I want the glory. Like, fill my box score, man. Coming to the NFL draft. I'm saying, you see this touchdown right here? Yeah, that was me. I did that.
You see this? No one in the backfield.
One in the backfield. It was all me.
It was on me. That's what I do.
But I think those are two spectacular plays, of course. But I think it's really interesting. I think it's really telling that Jamar had those two big plays, but everything between that was not really great for his standard. I mean, like, he ended with like 195 yards.
Yeah, it was really weird.
Right, he ended like 195 yards. I think 130 of them came on those two plays. And so the rest of it was like 16 carries for 60-something yards. It was a really quiet game for Jamar Jefferson. And if you told me that it would be like that, I mean, quiet, relatively speaking, he ended with 195 yards, obviously. But like, you take those two big plays away, and it's just kind of, he struggled to get going a little bit. And if you had told me that, I would have been like, oh, this is Cal's game. Like, they're going to win by like 10, 14 points. Because I didn't think I didn't think that you could get enough big plays from defense and special teams just based on what I'd seen throughout the year. And B, I just don't know how the offense works without Jamar Jefferson, but they did a lot of really good stuff.
They did, yeah, I agree. And mind you, I think to add on to what you said about 16 carries, 60 yards, I think the defense really was like, once they gave up that big 75-yard play, they were like, oh, snap, we need to fix something. So I think the defense really had some adjustments that they had to make, and they worked, obviously, for a little bit. But like you said, the offense did step up a lot in one play in particular.
Do you want to talk about it? I know you're dying to talk about it.
I am dying to talk about it. Okay. Oh, man. First off, I'm going to call it right now. I named this play. Okay. I was the first one to. I put it on Twitter. I texted Brady. I put it on Snapchat. There is proof that I named it this play. Okay.
I can vouch for this when it blows up.
Yeah, when it blows up, if it blows up, this play is called the Corvallis Special, all right? It's very reminiscent of the Philly Special that the Eagles pulled off against the Patriots, but it was very different. And let me explain. I'll explain both plays. So, in the Super Bowl, Eagles quarterback Nick Foles.
Heard of him.
He very good in the quarterback, in my opinion. So, he fakes a snap. He says, hut. He just stands still. Then he walks up to the center, and he's pretending to do an audible, right? The new audible, calling something, walks to his right, snapped the ball to the running back. I forgot who it was. Running back runs left, pitches it to Trey Burton, the wide receiver, throws it to Nick Foles, wide open the end zone, touchdown, right? Now, the Corvallis special is very different. And literally, I spent about an hour analyzing both plays. I was that invested in that play because I named
it. Oh, you're grinding the tape.
I was grinding the tape.
Yes, I love it.
I was literally analyzing. I analyzed every single little thing about it because I was like, I love this play so much. And I named
full
it.
Full coach mode up in here. I love that.
I was watching film. So one thing that's interesting is that so Nick Foles was in front, the running back was behind him. For the Corvallis special, Jebbia got the snap, and I believe it was B.J. Baylor was to his left. No, to his right. So directs up to Jebbia, hands it off to B.J. Baylor. B.J. Baylor runs to his left, pitches it back to Tyjon Lindsey, who runs to his right. Tyjon Lindsey throws it up in the air, touchdown. So the only major difference that I found was it was a direct snap to Jebbia versus being a direct snap to the running back for the Eagles. Yeah, I went for most of this play. I spent so much time watching both plays.
I don't have the super cool tape analysis that you do. there are two things that I think are really cool about that play, other than the obvious, like, oh my god, it's that play. The first one being, this was the first time that Tristan Jebbia and Tyjon Lindsey had a touchdown connection in their college careers.
Yeah.
And it was the other way around. You would think that the quarterback would throw to the wide receiver. Here's you know, some football knowledge for you. Typically, the quarterback throws the ball to the wide receiver.
If you didn't know.
Yeah, football 101. But this way, it was the other way around. And it's cool because they both went to Nebraska together. They were roommates in Nebraska,
yep.
I believe. They transferred over here together. And they hadn't had a touchdown connection until this game when Tyjon Lindsey threw to Tristan Jebbia. I think that's kind of cool.
That's very cool. And then I think it was the press conference. Tegan Quatoriano was like, "I'm not surprised Jebbia's got hands, meaning he can catch."
Jebbia's got mitts, and we didn't know that, but now we know.
I had no idea. It was insane.
We'll have to use that to our advantage. Here's the other cool thing in my mind about that play is just the guts to call that.
I know
in that situation. Here you are. It was third down, right?
It was third down, and they were down too. They were down by like three, I think.
Oregon State was losing. They had third down. You have, like we mentioned, the best running back in the Pac-12 in the red zone.
Mm-hmm.
And you don't give it to him. You don't even have him on the field for that play.
Because he's on the field.
B.J. Baylor. It was B.J. Baylor that took the that took the pitch. And I just think that Oregon State kind of understood the gravity of that game, right?
Yeah.
We talked so much about you have to win this game. Everyone kind of knew that you had to win this game if you wanted to do anything with this season.
Yep.
And here they are in the fourth quarter facing a deficit, third down in the red zone. Massive play, and they're just pulling out all the stops. And I don't think that I'm going to say it again. This is a pro Jonathan Smith podcast. We love us some Jonathan
we
Smith.
Love that man so
on
much.
This podcast. I don't think that a lesser coach does something like that. I think that a lesser coach might go for it on fourth down if they had to, but it would be a lot of okay. We were like 4 or 5 yards away. Run up the middle. If we don't get it, run up the middle again. You know, just kind of trust in your player and hope that, you know, the Cal defense kind of collapses in on themselves. But they didn't do that. They didn't sit back and just hope that Cal would, you know, shoot themselves in their foot. They digged into the bag of tricks and did something awesome. And I think that's really cool.
And that's something we've never seen before. I mean, we've seen the play, of course, but like you would never picture Oregon State doing that play.
Oh, no, not at all. Like
insane.
Years past, I don't think you have nearly as much innovation in the play calling or nearly as much innovation in what you're trying to do on offense. I think that's really cool, and I think that's very quintessential Jonathan Smith. Do you know what else is kind of crazy about that play? We ran the Corvallis special in like it's barely even like top three most insane things that happened in that game.
There's so much.
We had like a blocked there's punt. A we had the 75 yard punt. Touchdown run. We had an absolute dive.
We had the interception in the end zone.
Throw. Oh, we had the interception in the end zone. Fourth down.
That was insane.
How big did that play end up being? By the way, you have Cal going for it very early in the game, and again, that ended up being decided by 4 points. And
literally.
You not only stop them, but you get the pick and you you know, you get the ball back to the 20, you know, it helps field position that way. I don't think Oregon State ended up scoring after that pick, but it helps field position by like,
I don't think so.
I don't know, like 15, 20 yards.
Yeah, and it's insane.
You can look back on this game and there are like 20, 30 moments, quite honestly, that really decided it. And this game could have easily gone the other way, but it was a complete effort all the way across the board.
I had a great time watching. I was covering. I'm so glad I covered it. I didn't get to do broadcasting. That was Ben's job, but shout out Ben.
The incomparable Ben Paul, who did a fantastic job on the radio. Ben, if you're listening, shout out.
An amazing job.
And it was.
Yeah, shout out Ben. You got to teach me. I do broadcasting myself, but Ben, you got to teach me because he kind of spoiled the 75-yard touchdown. So Ben, come on, shut up. But I tuned back in after, and yeah, it was. He did amazing, but. Back to the Cal game. So
right, Cal game. Got a lot to talk about.
Cal game, yeah. And I think it's also interesting that Jebby only threw 20 times. Literally, he was 12 for 20, 147 yards, one touchdown, two interceptions. And that's more yards than the Washington game. I forgot the stats. But that's more yardage than this Washington game.
They got 85 yards.
He was lost to barely. 85 yards, at something like that. But then again, no, the elements, it was a nice game. It was – football weather, as the commentator would say. So
maybe that's how Oregon State wants to win, though, right? It's a lot of Jamar Jefferson. It's a lot of BJ Baylor. There's just a lot of doing things in the running game and a lot of doing things in the quick pass game. And not necessarily trying to keep the ball away from Tristan Jebbia, but not putting it squarely on his shoulders. Really making sure that you establish the run, for as much of a cliche as that expression is, that making sure that you establish the run and keeping the game to where Tristan Jebbia can make throws that he can manage, you know? Like third and like four or five, three situations rather than like, you know, third and long.
Like third and 17.
Ten. Yeah, exactly. Third and 17. It's a lot of trying to make it easier for their quarterback as he's trying to adapt to the speed of the game still. And so I think to that extent, like it worked to perfection. Like you said, he only threw 20 passes, but I think that you're going to see a lot of that from Oregon State going forward.
So before we talk about special teams, you want to talk a little bit about the Oregon State defense and how good they did?
I think we should. I have a question about the Oregon State defense. What is happening in the locker room at halftime? Last week, Oregon State allows 24 points in the first half, right? Not great. They allow 3 points in the second half. Great. That's fantastic. That's exactly what you want. This week, they allow 20 points to Cal in the first half. Not great. Second half, they allow 7 points in the second half. Great. So, again, I have to ask, what's happening in the locker room at halftime? Are they just really good at adjusting, or is Smith giving, like, some really fiery speeches or something? Because something's going on, but the second half defense has just been really good.
Well, to answer your question, it's got to be both, because have you heard Jonathan Smith speak?
I've heard him.
I love going to press conferences when he's there, because he could talk for hours, and I will listen to every single word he has to say. But, yeah, I do think that the defense, they're really good at adjusting. And it's crazy because they had to adjust without some of their key players. For example, Hamel Qureshi Jr. was injured. Simon Sandberg was another guy that was injured, which, by the way, they're both fine now. They're both expected to play on Friday. But, I think they do a really good job of just shifting and making these great plays. And you have so many young players that are stepping up, too. It's insane.
Yeah, I agree. It's a tough game, especially with how I think good Chase Garbers was playing. He had a rough first game. He was throwing heat against Oregon State, especially in the first half. He was dropping.
Oh yeah.
He was dropping dimes downfield.
I agree.
And the way that you adjust to that and be able to shut down that offense again, 7 points in the second half. They scored one time in the second half. I think that's really impressive. And it wasn't until halfway through the fourth quarter. And you see a lot of big plays from that defense too. Obviously the two interceptions stand out among them. Big interceptions. We talked about the first one. The second one, of course, was like massive, even bigger. It was that tip pass at the line where Oregon State ended up, I think it was a linebacker, not even a defensive back. John McCartney.
I think it was John McCartney. Yeah, John McCartney got it. Cause I think Akili Arnold like tipped that up in the air and then it was up in the air and then just fell in McCartney's hands.
two absolutely massive plays, and it kind of reminded me a lot of that effort against Washington too, where, you know, you have kind of a rough first half, you come out in the second half and things look a lot better, but it's like a lot of drives where Washington still moved the ball, it was just they were kind of struggling once they got on the other side of the field, like even in the red zone. Yeah. Similar against Cal, like I think the Cal was moving the ball well still, but once they got to scoring distance, they just really couldn't do anything. Oregon State really locked up when they had to, and I think that's impressive.
Also, I know we're talking about the defense, but there's one play on the offense I want to mention. Jack Coletto. Oh, my goodness. I love that man so much. Oh, my goodness. Okay. For those who don't know, okay, I am a 49ers fan, right? But if there's one player in the league I love so much, it's Taysom Hill. Because that man can do everything. Literally, he is my inspiration for the Swiss Army Knife, where I got my nickname from.
He can do anything, including win a start in the NFL.
Exactly. He did amazing in the start, by the way.
He did.
But Jack Coletto, he was that quarterback, right? I mean, granted, his job when he's that quarterback is like a Taysom Hill or Jalen Hurts, where you get the ball and run. But he does a great job of doing that. Granted, he rushed one time for 4 yards. But this man can literally play any position on the field. It's insane.
It's always so much fun when you see Jack Coletto come out, right? Because it's you have your linebacker taking snaps under center exactly. All of a sudden.
It's insane.
And you, I don't know. It's just wild. It really is like Taysom Hill-esque, where like every once in a while, not as often as Taysom Hill, but every once in a while we'll trot him out and you're just kind of like, is that the linebacker coming out? Is that Coletto? Linebacker?
What? Coletto?
Is he about to do something? And then he does. He gets
plus, that dude is big, too.
Yeah, I mean, good it's hard to tackle. I mean, yeah. It's hard to tackle a linebacker. They want to get him out there because he's pretty quick, and he's he's a big dude. You can't really bring him the ball down. Too. It's what's crazy is that I completely forgot that Jack Coletto got a snap in this play. That would be like the highlight of most games. But like we were saying, there was just so much insanity that happened in this game that it's hard to even like remember everything that happened because you have so much going on. You have such a good performance from the defense in the second half. They really buckled down when they needed to.
They did.
It's just the question that comes to my mind is how do you pair that second half effort with a first half effort? Because for as great as the second half was, and as much as you end up getting the win, of course, can't allow 24 points, 21 points, however many points in the first half and expect to win every week. You have to come out with those adjustments in mind. You have to come out with a good game plan. And to Oregon State's effort, I think that they did a much better job this week than they had in previous weeks, even in the first half. They, much to my happiness, they were blitzing a lot more.
Yes, they were. I noticed that.
They were trying to rattle Chase Garbers. They were trying to get to him. And I think it was working. They ended their game with more sacks than they had this year, more tackles for loss.
Yeah, they got 2 sacks.
I think you want a better effort more than 2 sacks, but it's a
step. I think it's a good start.
It's a step in the right direction. It's what you want, right? It's what you want to see, especially heading into a tough game against Oregon, which we'll get to later. But it's a step in the right direction. And I think that it's encouraging, but it's not quite where they need to be right now.
You're right. I mean, there's always room for improvement. Of course, Jonathan Smith said press conference, we didn't play perfect football by any means. And I like that. I liked how he's acknowledging, yes, we won. Yes, we looked amazing out there, but there is still more we can do. I think that's when a head coach can say that, it's really good to hear because, you know, like we did good. Yes, we won. Yes. But we could still do better. And like, I think it's like, we're not even done that. We're nowhere near as good as where we can be. So I'm really excited to see where they go.
For as much fun as all three phases of the game were, which they were, offense, defense, special teams all had some amazing plays and some amazing moments. There's definitely areas to improve in all three of them. I think especially on offense, we just got done talking about like Jamar Jefferson in between those two big runs was kind of quiet on the ground. Tristan Jebbia, like he had himself a fun little game. I don't think we even talked about that yet. He had a receiving touchdown, a passing touchdown, and a rushing touchdown.
I think only the 11th Pac-12 player to do so since 1996.
Yes, that's a stat I'm looking for. Thank you. Yep. 11th player to do that since 1996. But like, you know, there's still areas to improve. You obviously want to complete more than 12 for 20 through the air. You want to throw for more than 147 yards through the air. So there's ways to improve still, but it's a very encouraging first step for a team that really, really needed to win.
There is one play I want to highlight from defense. Alex Austin. Oh my
Shout
goodness.
Out Alex Austin.
Shout out Alex Austin. Those who don't know, I went to middle school, high school with him. I grew up with this kid.
And now you go to college with him.
Now I go to college with him, yeah. But he looked amazing. I remember this one tackle in particular. I forgot who caught it. But Alex, like, literally dangled him over the first yard line and brought him back so it didn't count for as he didn't get the yardage. You remember that play? I don't know if...
No, I think that was when I dangled him
and just threw him back.
But I ended up texting you at some point about Alex Austin. I think it was that play where it was like on a third down.
It was like third and like three.
It was man coverage. Alex had no help whatsoever. And the guy caught the ball. It was a really good catch. But Alex just buckled down, like you said, just kind of threw him back, made sure he didn't get that first down. And I texted you right there, and then I was like, God, Alex Austin can kind of play, can't he?
Yeah, he's – It's funny because so he's a cornerback, but I told you earlier before he was a wide receiver in high school. He played both sides.
Yeah,
that helps a little bit.
I think it really helps knowing what you need to do when you're playing cornerback at wide receiver, right? If you know what to expect from a wide receiver, like it just helps you be able to play cornerback a little bit more because you can kind of like pick up on little details of the game, little like intricacies of route running and stuff that you otherwise wouldn't be able to notice if you're just a cornerback. But yeah, he can play. He was someone that
he can play. He was on fire. I mean, there was like two calls against him, right? Brushed him off. I think Twitter, he looked amazing. And I think for me, it's kind of cool knowing that, like, you've seen this player grow, and the fact that he's only a sophomore and the fact he's only going to get better, I'm really excited to see what Alex Austin can do in the future. Shout out Alex Austin.
I agree. And he was someone that I just quite frankly didn't expect much from this year. When I look at the Oregon State defense, at least in the preseason, my thing was always kind of like, okay, our linebacker group is exceptional, excellent, from Rashid to Roberts to Spates. You have players on that group, but everything else to me was a question mark. Simon Sandberg on the defensive line can play too, but like everything else, you have like pieces here and there, but especially in the secondary, I wasn't sure what to expect or if it would be fun to watch or if it'd be a step in the right direction. But Alex Austin has been a sneaky guy in that secondary.
He has been.
That I think has really stepped up and has really elevated the team.
And I agree.
We've talked a bit last week about kind of the progression of Jonathan Smith's football teams. So, his first year was really ugly. They went 2-10. They got blown out in a lot of games the year before or the year after that, 5-7. So not a winning season, but you take a step in the right direction, and especially take a step on defense. Like, I think they were allowing something like 45 points a game in Jonathan Smith's first year. It was like 32 the year after. And now, like, they allowed 38 to, Washington State in week one, a game we don't talk about. We don't talk about it.
Not anymore.
It's in the past.
Or Washington. Yeah.
But I want to mention about the Washington game, though. Like, they only allowed 27 points in that game, only allowed 27 points to Cal. So it's.
That's true.
It's three games and it's early, but it is another step in the right direction on defense, which. For a guy like Jonathan Smith that is an offensive head coach and has the offense figured out, I think he does. What you really want to see is growth on defense. If you compare just like a fine defense with an offense that is run by an offensive guy that has playmakers that are still growing and are still very young, then I think that you can be in good hands. And I've liked what I've seen the last game and a half, the first half of the Washington game excluded, which I said, they allowed 24 points in that game, but then it was three in the second half, and then just 27 still isn't amazing, but it's better
compared to like allowing like 50 last year against Utah.
Hopefully we have Utah on the dock in a couple weeks. Hopefully that doesn't happen.
Well, first of all, hope they play, because I know Utah's been struggling.
Yes, Utah's played one game this year.
Yeah, and they got clapped by USC.
They did.
But yeah, I'm really excited to see. I'm just excited to see Alex Austin grow as a player. I'm excited to see the defense grow as a unit and Jonathan Smith grow as a head coach. I'm really excited to see all of that.
I'm excited to see where this team goes the rest of this year.
Yeah, I'm really excited too.
It's that, again, I'm going to say it's that game that you had to win, but now that you've won it, it unlocks so much more potential. I think you're sitting here at 1-2 rather than 0-3. And obviously you want to be sitting at 3-0 rather than 1-2, but now that you have that win in your back pocket, now that you're coming off of a win, it just makes things seem more possible, right? The season isn't lost. You know how to win. You've done it before. You know how to get strong efforts from offense, defense, and special teams. And you're heading into a three-game stretch of schedule that I think is pretty tough, even if Utah
it is tough. Yeah, I agree it is tough.
It's Oregon, who's ranked 9th. We're playing them this week on
Friday. Are they ranked? Oh, wow. They moved up.
Yeah, they moved up from 11 to 9.
Okay.
Then you have Utah, who, like we mentioned, they only played one game. They didn't look great in their first game. But yeah. I think that all things equal, just from a talent perspective, they have an argument to be the best, like most talented team in the conference.
I can see that.
Yeah, and it's just a matter of not having the experience, I think. Mm-hmm. And then you have Stanford, who, you know, they haven't looked spectacular, but they're still Stanford.
They did beat Colorado, though, right? I remember they beat someone.
I don't think they did. I think it was just close.
Okay, it was close. Okay. But yeah, I mean.
They put up an effort against Colorado, and Colorado's a really good team, too.
Mm-hmm.
So you look at that kind of schedule, and if you're sitting at 0-3, you're just kind of like, well, you know, season's over, right? Like,
yep.
we couldn't be Washington State.
We did our best, boys.
Yeah, it's pack it up, try again in 2021. But now that you have that win,
there's a fighting chance.
Things might get a little bit better. I was looking a little bit into it because I was curious. And so Oregon State started the season 1-3 last year. And after sitting through 2-10 the year before and 1-11 the year after, it was kind of just like another lost season, another hopeless season. And then they beat UCLA, which is fun, but, you know, it's UCLA. They weren't great last year either. But that game opened up so much. After they got their first conference win, it was wins against Cal, it was wins against Arizona, it was wins against Arizona State. And Oregon State looked like a formidable team the second half of the year after mm-hmm. they got that win.
Right.
You don't want to start slow, obviously. But I think that Oregon State could be a team that once they have that winning experience, they can really start to do some damage down the road.
Yep, I agree. All right, we're moving too fast, though. We're talking about the past, the present. We need to focus on the special teams play of the game.
Yes.
Yes.
Once again,
talk about that.
Once again, Oregon State, for the second week in a row, I believe, Oregon State had the Pac-12 special teams player of the week.
Yep.
This time, Josiah Irish. And,
oh, man.
I know that special teams are kind of your forte, your area of expertise.
They are my area of expertise. This one. Yeah, sure. I'll talk about the play itself. So, fourth quarter, like 5 minutes left. We were up, I believe. Yes, we're up. And Cal had a 3-and-out. Punter came out, drags up to punter, and Josiah Irish literally snuck his way past the defenders and put his hand out. And all you hear is a loud boom, like a bang.
It was an explosion.
It was an explosion, yeah. And then all you see the ball go backwards, like, and the punter ran really fast. He downed the ball in the 15, but that play was so insane. Literally, that play was so insane. I didn't tell you the story yet, but I was covering the game, right? I was home alone. My windows were open because it was a hot day. And I screamed so loud. I was like, oh, you know what? Oh.
Expletive.
Expletive, yeah. And mind you, I had my speakers all the way up, so it sounded like a gunshot, okay? So I said, oh, my neighbor comes from his house, and he's like, hey, you good? I was like, yeah, I'm sorry, Steve. My team blocked a punt. He was like, oh, okay. And he walked away.
I mean, I think it's important to note that you're home in California right now.
And yeah. So,
like, there's not as many Oregon State fans as walking. No. You were here in Corvallis.
No, yeah. But
and so it's just kind of like a random, like, all of a sudden, just Andre screaming just with his windows screaming. Open.
Yeah, and a gunshot happened, apparently. So, yeah, my neighbor might have shaken on me, but that
That's play, nice of him. That's nice, nice of him.
Yeah, I appreciate that very much. Thank you, Steve. You're the real one. But that play was so huge, especially because literally the week before we had a blocked punt. It was in the first half, first quarter. This time, fourth quarter. It was very comforting too, especially Josiah Irish too. Comforting, I guess, that Josiah Irish got the blocked punt because we really haven't seen much of him because he's been injured a lot. So I really think that I really am happy that he finally got his moment to show who he is and what he can do. And he's listed as a wide receiver, but I think Jonathan Smith said that, he was listed as a wide receiver, but he may be the best special teams player. So I'm really glad that he finally got his moment to shine.
He made an absolutely spectacular play. Like I mentioned, we've had two blocked punts now in back-to-back mm-hmm. games, so maybe we can start banking on special teams plays happening every week.
Maybe.
But especially with someone like Desire Irish, because when you get blocked punts, typically it's because of like a bad snap or like the punter
goes over the punter.
Yeah, you know, something bad happens from the punting team's perspective. Nothing went wrong.
Nothing went
for
wrong.
Zaire Irish was just awesome.
He snuck his way through. And you watch the film, and literally he just like runs through the middle, and the defender that was supposed to block him just walks like, it just like moves to his left, leaves him wide open. And just, I was like, I got this, six hand out. Bang.
No, he does. It was a good snap. The punter handled it well. I think that it was probably at a good angle. And
I think it was.
Desire Irish just like literally just like snuck around the blockers. Mm-hmm. Like he just completely, I don't think I've ever seen anything like that. He just disregarded the blockers. He's not a big dude either. He just he just used his speed. He bent around and he ended up getting to the ball. And that was such a huge play too. You're down by three. Yes, by 3 points.
Yeah.
If you're Oregon State, and then you get the ball back on the 14-yard line,
literally within the red zone, like with, you're primed,
like, with like 5 minutes like 5 minutes left to go, and you're gifted the ball just right there. And that ended up being the deciding play, because you don't score off of that play, you get the ball back, like you said, in the red zone. Plays later, Tristan Jebbia sneaks it in for a touchdown. That was his rushing touchdown on his hat-trick game. And so just absolutely huge play. It can't be overstated how big that play was. Just the timing, getting the ball so close to the red zone, or so close to the end zone, excuse me.
Yeah.
Just absolutely massive. And it's a game that's really encouraging, just all around. It wasn't a game where you're like, well, the offense played really well, but the defense needs to pick it up next.
It wasn't one of those. It was everyone did amazing, did a spectacular job.
It was a complete win.
They ran the gauntlet on them.
They ran the gauntlet. It was offense, gauntlet. Defense, special teams, the Trinity. And that's what you need.
The Holy Trinity.
It's the Holy Trinity of football. And that's what you need going forward. You know, you needed a game like this where your offense didn't look great against Washington the week before. Your defense 2 weeks ago didn't look good against Washington State. You needed a game where just everyone can come together and everyone can contribute and bounce back and make plays. And that's what Oregon State got.
Yeah. And I don't know why, but like every time I think of Josiah Irish's blocked punt, I think of Steve Gleason's blocked punt back in 2005, six, like with the New Orleans Saints against the Falcons.
Oh, right. I forgot.
I don't
about
know
that
why. Play. I think I just, I know, like, I'm comparing the two, but, like, maybe because it was, like, homecoming in a sense. Like, Josiah Irish finally getting his moment. Steve Gleason, he blocked the punt. And this was, like, right after Hurricane Katrina. Irish got the blocked punt after he was literally so many injuries. You read this guy's bio, and it said did not play because injury, did not play because injury. Played, like, two games, played three games. And, you know, now that he finally is playing – special teams, he's on the field. If I think you do that's insane. That's like, I don't know. I get happy every time I talk about it, because, like, you know, he finally got his shot.
It makes me think about what I was just talking about with the team in general. Like, once you get your first win, it opens up so much confidence, you know, possibility. You start looking at the schedule a bit different. I wonder if it'd be the same for a player too.
Yeah.
You know, like, really all we need as people is just one win to get us on the right track, right? We just need something to get us going. And for Desire Irish, like you said, someone that battled injury just consistently over and over again to show up on the field, make a massive play, probably the biggest play of the game, you know, make it for debate, one of the biggest plays of the game. It's nice. It's nice to see. And hopefully, you know, it gets him going heading into the rest of the season.
Yeah, I'm really excited to see where he goes. Also, okay, I'm a stats guy. Let's break down stats for a bit. Literally, Cal led us in everything. Okay. So, okay, total yardage, right? Cal had 439. We had 360. Oregon State had 360. Passing yards, Cal had 315. Oregon State 155. We did beat him in rushing yards. We had 205. They had 124. First downs, they had 24. We had 16. Total plays, they had 81. We had 51. Time of possession, they had 38 minutes. We had 20, like barely 22 minutes. Like, it's insane. Like, you would think on paper, you would think that Cal won this game because they let us pretty much in everything. But no, literally,
I think that's a sign of good defense and special teams plays, right? Because you're getting the ball back in really good field position. You're holding Cal to a lot of not super great drives, so they have to punt the ball back. You're forcing turnovers.
Your run game is good because you're getting your rushing yards.
yeah, you're keeping Cal out of the end zone. And then there's one, of course, there's one statistical category that Oregon State ended up winning, leading Cal in, that ended up being a big one. That was final score.
Yes.
Had more points, had more points at the end of the day than Cal did, 31-27. And it was just a fun game.
It was a very fun game to watch.
When's the last time you had that much fun watching a football game? Like,
against Arizona State last year.
Yeah, it's been a while though, right?
It's been a long while.
It was just a fun one to watch. More of those, please.
Please, more of those.
More wins, more entertaining games. You know, football at the end of the day is, you know, it's a game, it's for entertainment. So make it entertaining for me, pretty please.
Yep.
There's one last thing I want to hit on. I don't know how much we've covered a lot, right? We talked about a lot. There's one more thing I want to talk about, and that's the run defense, because you mentioned the, like, one actual statistical category that Oregon State led in was rushing yards. Oregon State had 205, Cal had 124. But that 124 number is such a big step in the right direction.
It is.
If you remember week one against Washington State, a team that loves to throw the ball, by the way, Washington State ran over Oregon.
Well, yeah, because they had, like Morgan McIntosh was on fire. Delora was like, oh, let me run too, and just started to take off. So
Jaden Delora was getting involved on the ground game.
Jaden Delora.
Deion McIntosh had 18 carries for 149 yards.
It's
in that team as a whole, that Washington State team ended up with 229 rushing yards for the game. Again, a team that loves to throw the ball. Washington was not much better.
Yep.
Washington, their leading rusher, only had 91 yards, but as a team, they ended up doing a lot better than that individual performance. It ended up being 267 yards on the ground for Washington as a whole. Mm-hmm. And then you come in this week against Cal and you hold them to 124, and Cal was not shy about running the ball either. I don't think they were as run heavy as Washington was, but 17 carries for the leading rusher. Like, Chase Garbers is kind of an athletic guy. He moves.
I'd say he's athletic. Yeah.
Yeah. He's a good runner.
He's a solid quarterback. I gotta admit. Solid quarterback.
He's a really good passer. His deep ball is pretty.
I know, yeah, it's insane.
He was putting some of those like 20, 30, 40 yard passes just like right in the bucket.
No, they tucked him around the corner too. I like that too. He tucked him in the corner of the end zone. So it was either you grab it or either the wide receiver gets it or it goes out of bounds.
Really good spots, yeah.
Really good spots, yes.
Keeping it out of danger for the most part, other than the two picks. Yeah, it was 17 carries for their leading running back. It was 38 carries as a team, and Cal only managed 124 yards on the ground. Like, for an Oregon State defense that had been getting burned by two different teams on the ground, like, that's awesome.
That's awesome. Yeah, you're right. I didn't think about that. You're 100% right. That is very exciting to see.
Especially in here, forgive me for looking ahead a little bit, especially when you have Oregon on the schedule next, where literally three of their players are ranked in the top seven in the conference in rushing yards.
Yep.
It's CJ Verdell at fourth, Travis Dye at seventh, and Tyler Shuck. Not show, Shuck with a hard Shuck. K noise. It ranks sixth at quarterback. I think he has the most rushing yards in the conference out of any quarterback.
I believe that, yeah. Well, I think Delora, if Delora would have played against, I think, Stanford.
He
might have, yeah.
Because he's a good runner too. He can really run. But that's the kind of performance you need against a team that runs the ball so well, right?
Literally,
It's about building confidence. You get that one win, but it's also like your running game steps up and it's like, we can do this again. And you absolutely have to do it again against Oregon.
That game, oh man, I'm excited for it, mainly because it is the unnamed rivalry.
It's Oregon.
I will not say the name because, you know, I'm not supposed to say it. The unnamed rivalry.
Cascade Classic, you know, Platypus Bowl. Yeah, I mean, you know, Cascade Cup, Platypus Bowl,
Battle of the Nature.
The Battle of the Nature.
Battle of the Nature. The
you got two like water creatures.
Two water creatures going at it.
Ducks.
Battle underwater. I don't know. Battle of the Ponds.
Battle
of the Ponds.
That's the one. Okay.
Yes. So
we have the Corvallis. Yeah,
the Corvallis Special.
Corvallis Special.
Battle of the Ponds.
We're just coining names left and right today.
I want a 30 by 30 for 30 when I'm older.
The guy that came up with the name for the Corvallis,
the Corvallis Special.
And the new rivalry for Oregon State and Oregon's rivalry game. Which, by the way, a lot of people like outside the state don't know, but like, these two teams have played each other like an insane amount. Like, yep. I think it's
insane
like
amount.
like sixth, seventh, maybe eighth, like most played rivalry. Like,
no, I think we're the first, actually.
Is it the first?
I feel like we're the first. I could be wrong, but I feel like we're the first.
No one fact check that.
No one fact check that. Yeah, don't quote me.
That sounds right. Me. And I'm gonna go with it. Whatever the official meeting total is, like they played each other a lot, like dating back to like the early
1900s. Early, way before any of us were born.
Very, very early. And so there's a lot of history on this in this game. And it's just always a fun one. I hate the cliche of like, you know, throw the record books out or whatever, but really like with Rivalry Week, I think that's true to an extent. And I think that if you want an example of that, just look at last year's game. It was Oregon State on the road back when fans were allowed in stadiums. Oregon State on the road in a very loud Autzen Stadium against Oregon. You're without Jake Luton, who is an NFL, I don't know if star is the right word, but he's playing for an NFL team right now. He had a rough game last week. It's a good defense, though. It's a good defense.
Very solid defense and offense. Very well-rounded team.
Yeah, you're without Jake Luton, who was your starter the entire year. He's an NFL talent, you know, whether he's, you know, the best quarterback in the league or the worst. He's an NFL talent, and that's without question. He got drafted. You're starting Tristan Jebbia for his first start of his college career, and you lose by 14? Like,
not bad.
That's not bad to an Oregon team that was really good last year. I ended up winning the Rose Bowl. That's really good. Yeah. And I think it's the perfect example of just, you know, throw the record books out. You'd never really know with these two teams meeting, as much of a cliche as it is.
No, yeah, I agree. Speaking that's cliches. Sport of football, though. You never know what's going to happen. Anything can happen.
Exactly. I mean, they say it like all the time, like the game's not played on paper. You know, they take the field and they play for a reason. If you were just looking at the stat sheets, you know, just give it to Oregon. But I don't know. I think there's a lot of reason that you could be hopeful if you're Oregon State this week. Mm-hmm. I think it's an uphill battle against, I think, another really good Oregon team. But it's a battle that I think Oregon State ends up winning in some variations of the game.
Yeah, I agree.
It's a game where you're going to be banking, hoping that your run defense returns to form after a really good game against Cal. And also Oregon, like, they ended up winning last week, but not very convincingly.
Yeah, they were down at halftime, I think.
I think they were winning at halftime because the last play of half was like a pick six.
Oh, okay. Yes, you're right. You're all right.
Yeah. And Oregon ended up getting that pick six and returning it for a touchdown. They ended up taking the lead in the half. But it's important to note that UCLA was starting their backup quarterback.
Yep.
They turned the ball over four times, and Oregon won 38-35. Their defense did not look super impressive. Mm-hmm. I think that Shuck might have had his best game of his college career. Yep. And I think the offense just played well in general. But again, it comes back to if you're the Beavers and you can shut down that run, it just makes what Oregon wants to do on offense so much more difficult.
Yep, I agree, hands down. I'm really excited for the game and can't wait to cover it.
Hope do you want to do a score prediction?
Oh, no.
you want me to go first?
Sure, go first.
Okay. It should go mentioned that last week I bragged about getting the score prediction for the Washington game exactly right. Yes. And then we started calling me Nostradamus Jr. Yep. I was not right this last week. So I got to try to earn that nickname again. And so here I am bringing the heat. I want to be optimistic, but I also want to be realistic. I think it's a close game. I think Oregon State had some form of a get-right game against Cal. I don't know if it's enough to beat the best team in the conference. I'm going to say, like, Oregon 41, Oregon State 31.
Okay.
And that's my prediction. I think that it's going to be closer than most people might expect.
Yes.
I think that Oregon State gives it their all. I think that they look a lot better than they have in previous weeks. They play closer to a complete game than they have in previous weeks also, but it also just won't be enough against a good Oregon team. 41-31, and this is the week that I earn my Nostradamus Jr. title.
Okay, I'll be the optimistic one of the bunch.
Let's go. Let's go.
I'm going to go Oregon State by 3, and it's going to be one of those where it's like 2 seconds left, field goal.
Love it. Love it.
It's going to be one of those.
That's the one thing that was missing from last week was the last second field goal.
Last second field goal. I'm going to call it. We're going to win there by a field goal.
Okay, you can have my title if that ends up happening.
I really hope it does. Knock on wood, but
I'll do some knocking too. I'll do some knocking too. Wooden desk. We've removed all curses from the air.
I'm calling it by 3. Close game.
I think that's it. Is that it?
I think we had everything covered. We talked about all the tremendous plays that happened. Yeah.
I'm happy. Solid. We got football on a Friday.
Oh, I cannot get any better.
I can't wait. I can't wait to talk about what happens next week with all of you guys. Thank you all for listening again, as always. This was as fun as it always is.
Of course.
I'm hoping to come back and have victory round number two with you guys. Celebration round number two.
Hope I can brag that I was right.
And we'll see the next time we talk. Until then, guys, have a happy holidays, have a safe holidays, and I will see you next time.
Go Beavs.